Episode 100. Hello, everybody. My name is Randy Cantrell, coming to you from Dallas, Texas, live in the Yellow Studio, City of Origin. As we said, it's Dallas, Fort Worth. We call it the Metroplex. I don't know how monumental this episode is, to be honest. I mean, getting to 100, is there anything particularly special about that? Maybe. Cliff Ravenscraft, the podcast answer man, I've heard him say before that getting to episode 7 is kind of a big deal. I think by that he just means that if you can get to episode 7, you might be onto something that you can sustain. I don't know. I'm sure he knows more about those kinds of things than I do. This is episode 100, so I don't know what that proves. I think it just proves that it proves I'm not a quitter. That's for sure. Today, I want to talk with you a little bit more about Stephen Covey's The Eighth Habit. And if you don't know what that is, The Eighth Habit is finding your voice and inspiring others to do the same. Now, here at Bula Network, we are all about helping businesses, helping solopreneurs and small business owners in the art of being remarkable. That necessarily means helping people discover ways to earn what they are worth. My business is all about really helping people improve the bottom line, improve the top line, and improve their personal income. Yes, I am a capitalist pig to the core. But here, we do that and we throw in some personal development kind of stuff. And yeah, I admit, it's kind of a big scattershoot, but it's okay. Keeps it kind of fun. So that's what we're going to talk about. Might throw in a little bit of internet marketing. Might even discuss politics just a little bit. You never know. It's episode 100, so I'm going to do what I want. Hey, I'm glad you're here. I hope you subscribe to the podcast. You can do that over at iTunes. You can also get the... Is it a regularly random newsletter? Is that how I've described it? Over on the... right-hand margin of the website, Bula, B-U-L-A, network.com. And I guess episode 100 deserves a little bit of a reset. Bula is a Fiji term that means both hello and goodbye, kind of like aloha in Hawaiian. But I ran across the term over 30 years ago for whatever reason, just thought that's kind of cool. That's just kind of cool. It means life. In particular, it means life is good, and I would begin to use it in internal company memos as the greeting, you know, instead of dear whatever or hello or attention. I would just write capital B-U-L-A with an exclamation mark, Bula. Yes, I had to explain it, just like I am now, but I only had to do that once. And I explained it once, and I'm sure every new employee that came along and that saw it, I'm sure the other employees just told them, he's crazy, you know, he's crazy, he thinks he's from Fiji. I've never been to Fiji. Have you been to Fiji? I'd like to hear about it. I don't know that I've, surely I know somebody who's been to Fiji, but I can't think of it off the top of my head. Historian Arnold Toynbee, according to Stephen Covey, The Eighth Habit, gave what Mr. Covey believes is a pretty good summary history of society when he made the comment, nothing fails like success. Nothing fails like success. Now, the economy used to hinge around being hunters and gatherers. Gatherers. Did I put too many errs in there? You know, you go out and you gather berries. You gather stuff that's edible. Hopefully stuff that doesn't kill you. I guess I guess people learn the hard way. Yeah, that right there, that'll kill you. Yeah, Uncle Fred, he ate some of that, killed him. So the rest of us, we steered clear of it. I mean, I'm not sure how that worked. Have you ever thought how you would fare if you had to go back to that world? If you had to go back to society where you had to get up in the morning and go hunt for your food, or go gather things that just grew out in the wild? Something tells me that my family wouldn't have been very many generations old. I'm just saying, I'm not real sure about it. Hunter-gatherer. Well, as time moved forward, somebody got the bright idea. You know, instead of going out trying to hunt this stuff, or trying to gather things that grow in the wild, why don't we just grow our own? And that way we know it's safe. And we don't have to go rummaging around the woods for it. We'll have it right here, next to the house. Well, that just seemed like a terrific idea, doesn't it? I mean, why didn't somebody think of that sooner? Over 90% of the people lost their jobs when that transition happened. I guess what that means is, 10% of the people decided, no, that's not for us. We want to do it the hard way. We're going to go out here and traipse through the woods and try to find berries that we, you know, you guys, that's, y'all go ahead. You grow your wheat and your corn and other things. Nah, we'll go out here and spend about half a day trying to get two hands full of berries. And we hope they won't kill us. 90% of jobs lost. Now, here's the big thing. 50 times the productivity. You might could argue that it higher than that. I mean, if you just had a little bit of land and you just planted a little bit of stuff, and even if not all of the crop came in, I mean, how much more productive would the food supply be than just going out trying to forage for whatever grew in the wild? But in his book, I think Mr. Covey uses the 50X component, 50 times the productivity. And that's why over 90% of the jobs lost, because it just made overwhelming sense to migrate to that economy. Okay. And then time marches on, and we move to the industrial age. You know, this is Henry Ford and the Model T and all that stuff. You know, the assembly line thing. And guess what happened? Well, people began to leave the family farm. Where did they go? Well, they went to the cities where they went. They went to the city because that's where the jobs were, and the jobs primarily focused around industry. And you needed a lot of labor. In the industrial age, it needed a lot of labor. It needed a lot of people. And so it beckoned. It beckoned. And people on family farms all over America, they heard the siren call. And they went to the city. And again, over 90% downsizing. And what this necessarily meant is, no, we're not going to move to the city. We're not going to move to the city. We're not going to take that factory job where, you know, we don't have to go work out in the sun from dark to dark, do it 7 days a week, work our fingers to the bone, because now we can go work for the man and we can get a paycheck, and we can get that paycheck every other Friday, and we can have the weekends to ourselves, and it pretty decent quality of life. Easier way to make a living. And again, 50-fold improvement in productivity. We were able to do things because of mass production. In the industrial age, we were able to do some things that you just, well, prior to that, craftsmen had to do one-ofs, or as they call them, one-offs. I need to research that. That's a phrase that's always kind of taken me. A one-off. One-off. One-off what? Well, we went from the one-off done by the hand craftsman to the industrial age where we could crank out a number of these things and we could do it efficiently and effectively. And so then we go from the industrial age to the information knowledge age. What's the productivity increase between this age and the industrial age? I don't know that you could even quantify it. How would you quantify it? I'm not a statistician, but I don't know how you'd. I can't even get my head wrapped around. Well, look at three big examples here. Look at Microsoft, Google, and Apple. Okay, we can argue that all three have products of some sort. They all three have services. Microsoft, okay, it was a physical product. It still, in some cases, is a physical product, but that even that physical product is digital, and the digital age clearly changed everything because part of the information knowledge age is digital. Apple, yes, they have products, but they also have services, but I would say these are three companies that are pretty much the epitome of the information knowledge age that we are in. Covey throws out a number, 10,000. 10,000x, 10,000 times more productive. Who can argue with that? Not me. And he poses the question in the book, and keep in mind, I think the date of the book was 2004. Will there be a 90% downsizing? He believes so. Well, here we are some years later, and I think we're seeing evidence of it. Sidebar, politics. Washington is not going to fix all of our problems. More often than not, Washington is going to inflict damage. Yes, I'm a capitalist. I'm very apolitical, by the way. I'm completely supportive of our government and those that have authority over us because I believe it's the thing to do based on what my faith tells me. But I'm a business guy. And as a business guy, I'm not real fond of big, big government. I would rather government step back, get out of our way, let us go on about our things. And yes, absolutely, positively, we should pay our taxes. Yes, I believe they should be reasonable. Yes, I believe they should be. Yes, I believe we should have a flat tax. Now, everybody can get all amped up and go, well, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. Let me tell you something. If you hold that position, if in America, if the rich aren't getting richer, then that necessarily means that the poor are going to be getting poorer. I mean, we are fed so much bunk that people just swallow hook, line, and sinker. If people who are achievement-driven and people who are accomplishment-driven and people who are paid well and people who have amassed wealth, if those people aren't able to increase their wealth, where do you suppose that leaves the average man? In dire straits, that's where it leaves him. I'm going to tell you where it leaves him. We want the rich to be getting richer. Now, everybody takes this idiotic position. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people take this idiotic position. The left absolutely takes this idiotic position. And yes, if you haven't figured out by now, if I were to be political, I would definitely be, let's just say I'm a fan of Rush Limbaugh, and you can draw your own conclusions. Click. I heard a lot of people clicking the stop button on play, which is, frankly, good riddance. See ya. Perfectly okay with me. We need to foster success. We need to foster achievement. We need to foster accomplishment. We don't need to be belittling it. We don't need to be demeaning it. And we certainly don't need to be doing things to hamper it. But But alas, Washington has found something that it's very accomplished at, and that is squelching creativity, squelching innovation, squelching initiative. You don't agree? That's fine. 10,000 times the productivity in this information knowledge age versus the industrial age. I just don't argue with that. But again, I'm not sure that we can quantify it. 90% downsizing, that is, are people going to adapt and adjust as they historically have, at least the majority, and figured out, you know, this doesn't work anymore. And there you have the quote by Mr. Toynbee, "Nothing fails like success." Once upon a time, hunting every day and going out in the woods to gather your berries, that was, well, that's success. That was success. That typified success. That's how it worked. Enter the agriculture age, and all of a sudden, that does not work so well. Well, why are you telling me that it just stopped working? No. Something else came along that we figured out worked better. And it naturally called to most people, over here. Look, this is a whole lot better. And I guess about 10% of the people just dug their heels in and said, no, I like to hunt. Yeah, but look at how hard it is. Or it doesn't matter. And you're always going to have that. You know, you're just always going to have that. You're always going to have, well, I think you're going to have more than that. I think you're going to have a group of people who are going to stick with the old way. Because it's what they know. There could be a demographic component there. I mean, let's say that the average lifespan was, back in the day, was 50. I don't know what it was, but just go with me. So if it was 50 and, you know, you were in your 40s, yeah, probably not likely that you were going to change. You know, stick with what you know. Why not? So it's hard. You've been doing it all your life. You got a few more years left. Go with it. I think there's also a component of people that just, that's just what they like. Yes, I know it's hard, but I like it. I think there's going to be another group. I don't know how you'd quantify this group either, but I think there's going to be another group that might not have been very good at the hunter-gatherer. I mean, come on, some families were going to be fatter than others, for sure, because they ate better, right? Which is because the head of the house, he could hunt better. He was more effective. I mean, not all hunters are created equal any more than all farmers are created equal. And then I suppose that there was a group that just, you know, they were just lazy. I don't want to go hunt. Well, if they don't want to get up and they don't want to go hunt, they probably didn't want to get up in the morning and go farm either. You know, society has always had the ne'er-do-wells, the slackards, the slugs. I mean, you're not fooling me. We've never had a time where we didn't have that group of people. Now, today, we are highly rewarding that group of people, by the way. Oh, well, they're underprivileged. Listen, I understand that there are some people that have a tough time. But I also understand there's an enormous amount of people who have a tough time, and it is their own fault. So all the rest of us are going to band together, and we're going to enable them. Yeah, you've not watched enough episodes of Intervention. We need a massive intervention. We need an intervention against laziness, slothfulness. People with their hand out. We need an intervention against entitlement. Hey, I told you, I warned you up front. There was going to be some political stuff. Hey, it's episode 100. You don't like it? Skip on. Maybe I'll survive and I'll get to episode 101. You know, everybody, I understand, I guess, the sentiment of a family farm. And to me, the one thing that I really fully understand is the land component. And I think it's such a sensitive topic because that's what's involved. It's land. And typically it's family land. It's land that my father had. It's land that my grandfather had. It's land that my great grandfather, perhaps even further out than that. It's land that's been in the family for generations. To me, the saddest thing isn't the way of life. It's not the fact that the farm, you know, as an income producing thing went away. It was that the land, you know, the land in the family. Yes, there's, you know, I'm sad by that. I'm sad by the guy that wants to operate the family farm, and that's what he wants to do, and finds it just tough to do. I don't know that there's an answer for that, because really what we found out when we went from the agriculture age to the industrial age is we figured out ways to industrialize agriculture. It's why the conglomerates came in and bought up the family farms. They had more effective ways and efficient ways and productive ways to farm the land. But, you know, here's the great thing. In this information knowledge age, there are some family farms. There are some farms that really cater to kind of the, pardon the brand name, but they kind of cater to the Whole Foods market type of consumer. And so there is the ability to even go back into some of these other ages because of this information knowledge age. We can kind of go back and we can really be niche-y. So that's kind of cool. And that's an opportunity. That's an opportunity for the family farm. That's an opportunity that really didn't exist until we got to this information knowledge age, where people, you know, now they were cognizant of maybe what was being done to them by the big conglomerate, pesticides and a variety of other things. And people are proving that they are willing to pay a premium for that kind of thing, and that premium hopefully gives economic power to the small farm, the family farmer, to cater to that crowd. Now, if a farmer doesn't want to cater to that crowd, I certainly am not an expert at farming, but I know a thing or two about business models. It's a big component of what I do. And really, that's what we're talking about when we go from hunter-gatherer. Just look at those as business models. So the business model is you get up every morning, you go out, and you hunt for the food for that day. There's no refrigeration. You know, there's smoking techniques, and there's salting, and there's other things that you can do to preserve things. But you don't have refrigeration, and refrigeration would be a game changer. No pun intended when it comes to hunting for game. So that was the business model. When agriculture business model entered the picture, all of a sudden the hunter business model, well, that just seems broken, doesn't it? And then when the industrial age came and that industrial business model, well, the agriculture model seemed broken. Enter the info knowledge age, and now the business model is just, well, it's topsy-turvy. It's there are people doing things in some crazy narrow niches because there's information and there's knowledge, and it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And as Kevin Kelly so aptly wrote eons ago in his blog about 1,000 true fans, a business really doesn't need incredibly high market share to survive or even thrive. Now, Mr. Covey argues that the next business model or the next economy coming is going to be wisdom-based. This is where I kind of get back on my heels and dig in a little bit, because I'm not... Mr. Covey might be giving the human race a bit more credit than we deserve. Now, had he said the next one will be a foolish-based, I might go with you. But wisdom-based, I don't know. Here's where everybody goes, well, you're cynical. You're cynical. Yes, I am. And it has nothing to do with age. I've been cynical all of my life. Now, my cynicism isn't so deep and dark that I see storm clouds everywhere. I see the worst of everything. I'm just the eternal pessimist. No, it's not that kind of cynicism. It's just a cynicism in that I've been in sales and marketing for too long, and I just know how people are. And the truth of the matter is most people, and people as a in general, when we're talking about mass marketing kind of things, by and large, people are gullible. Let's take another sidebar, shall we, to internet marketing. Because it is an information knowledge-based, what we have now done is there's a segment of society, and yes, I'm painting with a broad brush here, and I know that. But in this information knowledge-based society, back in the 40s, there were con men. I'm rather intrigued by the history of con men. Clever people, some really clever people. And I'm always fascinated at the psychology of it. I'm fascinated at their psychology. I'm fascinated at the psychology of those people who were so duped by them. But, enter the info knowledge world, and now what you've got is you've got internet marketing. Internet marketing is basically a business opportunity. Let me show you how to make some money. It's going to cost you, but, I'm going to show you how to make some money. Now, I'm not making an analogy between internet marketing and this, but I remember going to newsstands, and there would be magazines like Income Opportunity, and some of them would be legit. Some of them, I'm sure, would not be. And these would be business opportunities. Send us this much money, and we'll show you how to open up your own paint shop or lawn care business or, whatever. But it was basically what we called back in the day, we called it BizOp, business opportunity. And you could go into any newspaper that had a classified section, and I'm sure that they had, and I'm sure they still have. I haven't seen a newspaper, and I couldn't tell you how long. Certainly not classified. They probably have a business opportunity section. That really is what internet marketing is all about. Internet marketing is about telling people how you two can make money over the internet. And that is the information and the knowledge that they propose to sell. We will sell you this ebook. We will sell you this course. We will sell you this membership. We will sell you this information on how you two can be successful, make money, get rich. Now, I'm not saying they're all charlatans and scam artists, but an awful lot of them are. An awful lot of them are. And as time has marched on in this information knowledge economy, it's been rather interesting to me to watch some of these things unfold. I listened just recently, and there's a fellow who really takes issue with these people. And if you haven't, I will warn you. Here's an explicit warning. He is ridiculously profane. Ridiculously profane. But I've got to confess, sometimes I giggle. I giggle a little bit. He takes enormous umbrage with these internet marketing folks, and goes by the moniker Salty Droid. And if you've not been to, I don't know, I'll put a link, saltydroid.com or .org or something. Aaron Wall, I've mentioned Aaron Wall before. Aaron Wall operates SEObook.com. And Aaron Wall did an interview with The Droid. You can find it. If you go over to SEObook.com, just search that site. If I can find that, I'll put that in the show notes as well. He just hammers at these internet marketers and pokes fun. All of their prices end in a seven. The big price point is $19.97, and that's not $19. That's $1,997. And some of these people now are incredibly clever. Some of them are they're very good marketers. I just happen to take issue with, the business model. In so many cases, they're really not providing value. It's a money grab. It's a money grab. And it's very con artist-ish, if that's a word. But increasingly, you know, we are finding just, I know, you one story hits and another story hits and somebody gets indicted and the FTC cracks down on somebody else. And then you hear stories of men leaving their families and running off with somebody else who's an internet marketer. And it's a really, really seedy, seedy world. Now, I was rather fascinated a few years ago when a number of internet marketers began to really kind of morph over into mainstream. Well, you know, we've always had that. We've had that where people who were kind of working on the fringe, maybe they weren't breaking the law, but maybe they were violating a lot of ethical and moral principles, and they would migrate into mainstream. They would kind of leave their shadiness a little bit and try to come over into the light. Quite frankly, because more people, they could sell more people. And I've seen that. I've seen that happen over the last 3 to 5 years. I've seen a number of people in the internet marketing world who made their name in internet marketing, and they've morphed over in, and they've drifted into more mainstream motivational kind of folks and inspirational kind of people and public speaking kind of people, platform performers. And it's going to be interesting to watch. It's going to be interesting to watch as this, some of this kind of filters out. Here's what we know about the information knowledge age, and you hear about it all the time. Authenticity and transparency. Well, the fact is, it's not always what it seems. The fact is, transparency and authenticity, they can be, and they always have been, in some cases, contrived. Contrived. Things just are not always as they appear to be. So call me cynical. Call me cynical if somebody puts out something and they claim that they make $50,000 every month. Pardon me if I don't believe that. And pardon me if I'm a bit cynical in that here's how I make $50,000 a month, and I just am so compelled to help you make $50,000 as well. I've just been on the planet too long. Sorry. Not buying it. I'm right there with Salty Droid. I am just not buying it. And I'm rather tired of all the living out loud. I've mentioned this before, and it still irks me. You know, everybody's willing to do something if it'll get them some attention. But let's see how many people line up to do something good, something honorable, something noble, and nobody knows. Nobody finds out. That's a whole lot shorter line, let me tell you. In fact, there may not be anybody standing in that line. Okay, get in line over here if you're willing to do something good, and we can all tweet about it, and we can post Facebooks about it, and we can blog about it, and we can comment about it, and we can make sure everybody knows. Well, that line just goes on as far as the eye can see. Everybody's in that line. Okay, stand in this line over here. If you want to do something good for somebody, nobody's ever going to know. And you hear crickets chirping. And you hear crickets chirping for a reason. Well, that just doesn't make any sense, because here's the rub. Well, what do I get out of it? Well, nothing. Ah, remember the eighth habit, find your voice. Now, find your voice carries with it a number of different meanings. It's not finding, you know, the tone and the timbre of your voice. It's, you know, figure out who you are. Just figure out some things about yourself. That's why I did the episode 99 of Know Thyself. And then help somebody else do it too. Well, it's that. They're both tough things now. They're both really, really tough things, which is why I'm rereading the book. And the book, by the way, I mentioned before, the book is, I would not describe this as his best effort, for sure. It's a cumbersome read, which is another reason that I'm trying to do this for you. I think the message is powerful. But, you know, pot calling the kettle black and all that, I don't know that I can throw too many rocks, because we can all be verbose if we want. And he's kind of verbose in this. It's a little bit of a cumbersome read, but I think the message is powerful. I believe in the message. Find your voice and then inspire others to find theirs too. I think there's too many people, sadly, that are just missing the whole point. Just missing the whole point. Everybody gets focused on work. Everybody gets focused on making money. And as I started out by telling you, I'm a capitalist pig. I believe that people should earn what they're worth. Now, I think some people are. Some people are not worth anything, and they're not making anything. I think others of us, we've got something to contribute, something that's valuable, something that people are willing to pay for. And I think in some cases, I work with business people all the time that in some cases, I think they're just absolutely short selling themselves. Had a client recently and I went through the pricing and I just told him flat out, you're crazy. You're crazy and you're stupid. You're giving this away. You know, this doesn't work. And he was describing how, financially it's a struggle. And I'm like, there's no reason. Your stuff is too good. There's no reason for this struggle. And did a little bit of research and convinced him, you know, in one of his solutions, I said, you're not even in the conversation because you're about a third the price of the competition. You think that's a competitive edge. The fact of the matter is you're not in the conversation. People aren't even going to consider this as a solution because they don't take it seriously enough. You know, you need to earn what you're worth. So, you know, we're setting about to fix that. That may be the case for you. Now, in some cases, people are crazy priced. You know, I'm thinking about internet marketing types and ebooks. Well, it used to be a $97 ebook, a $77 ebook, a $47 ebook. Do you have ebooks free or paid that are on your hard drive that you've never read? Raise your hand. I have both hands up. Well, actually, I don't. Okay, now I do. I have both hands up in the air. I've got there. I don't know how many ebooks I've got. I don't know how many audios, MP3s. I don't know how many videos I've got clogging up a hard drive or two that I've never consumed. And there is the other problem with this information knowledge economy. There's so much of it. How do you know what's good? I mean, do we really need another blog about blogging? Well, you could argue, do we need another podcast? And I would say yes, and here's why I would say yes. People just might like the way you do it, you know? I've had conversations with my wife, and she is a seamstress. She sews. Is that right? Seamstress? Yeah, well, you know, a sower is somebody that goes out and sows seed, S-O-W-E-R. A sower. Well, it couldn't be S-E-W-E-R. That's sewer. Why is that sewer and not sower? Why can't that be a sower? Maybe there is. I don't know. At any rate, I digress. And she's like, well, you know, there's no people ask her all the time. Hey, can you teach me how to do this? Show me how to do that. And I said, you know, you could probably, there's a business there somewhere. I mean, there's a way to, as the internet says, monetize that some way, surely. And she's like, well, why would anybody pay for that? You can find it free. And I said, well, then why are people asking you to teach them? Why don't those people just do that then? Yeah, she didn't have a comeback. I said, because they want you to show them. I mean, why do you think there's so many guitar instructors out on the web? Why do you think there's so many diet books? You know, people are looking for something they can connect with. They're looking for something that, okay, that resonates with me. That, as people like to say, that speaks to me. Well, that's literally, I do speak to you. That's why there's the podcast. Episode 100. Wasn't this fun? There's 40 minutes you'll never get back. I am very appreciative, I really am, of your time and attention because as I said, I'm a capitalist pig and I know that you'll make more money, but I also know that you can't manufacture more time. Nobody can help you do that. That'd be a great business model, but it's just impossible. I'll pick up more on the 8th habit, but I don't know. I hope you picked up something from all this. If you got nothing more, get this. It's pretty urgent that we morph and that we adapt. It's pretty urgent that we embrace the new things coming down the pike. I don't mean that you check your convictions at the door and that you surrender to the way the world is headed morally. But when it comes to the business models that just establish everything, and now that we are in this information knowledge age, you just got to get on board if you're not already. Time is a wasting. Will the next one be wisdom? I have a hard time with that. Sorry, Mr. Covey, but, you know, we can hope. We can hope that as time moves forward that we all get smarter and wiser. Sometimes I think we can get too wise. We get too big for our britches, and we can begin to think that we're all that and then some, and God gets shoved out of the picture. And boy, don't we see that happening every day. I'm glad you're here. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is BulaNetwork.com, B-U-L-A, network.com. That's the company name. We kind of riff on about just a lot of things, personal development, business, all kinds of stuff here. I do want you to subscribe to the podcast over at iTunes, if you would. I would like you to enter your email address for the regularly random newsletter. It comes out once in a blue moon. We're marching headlong into Labor Day weekend. I hope you have a good one. I plan on it, Lord willing. Till next time, I'll see you.